when we use the word purpose, it really answers the question of why do we exist? And why does our bank exist? And our purpose statement is to positively impact our customers, our community, and our employees through Christian principles. And when they can look back and say, hey, I'm glad Glenwood State Bank was part of my journey, that's fulfilling. And we feel that that's our purpose of why we're here, is to just make that impact on all those different entities, and it's rewarding.
This is Behind the Vault, where we study the best in community banking. On this show, we talk with community bank and credit union leaders about their approaches, challenges, and successes in serving their communities in today's world. I'm your host, Rich Edwards. Our aim is to highlight and strengthen one of the most essential parts of our economy, the community financial institution. Stick around at the end of the show to learn how you can be a guest on Behind the Vault. And now, on with the episode. Ownership in banking can be more than just dividends. It can often drive strategy and the long-term legacy of financial institutions. To tell us a story about that today, we have Peter Nelson. Peter's the president of Glenwood State Bank. The bank originally opened their doors in 1907, and they've grown to over $500 million in assets, and they're looking to the next generation of ownership. Peter, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about the history of Glenwood State Bank and kind of how you got to the structure that you're operating under today?
Sure. So the bank started in 1907, but our family got involved in the late 60s. And that was when my father-in-law started working in the bank. And so through time, he and some partners bought out the ownership. There really wasn't a succession plan then. And so he had the opportunity to buy into the bank and become a part of a team that was the majority shareholder. And over the next 50 years is when he purchased the remaining shares. And today, the 100% of the shares are within our family. And the reality is he doesn't actually own many shares anymore. Now it's in his grandkids' name and in the second generation, which is the generation that I'm in. So it's definitely been a family-owned bank, or definitely is a family-owned bank, and has been for quite some while. And I guess I think that matters. That ownership structure provides some unique opportunities that I'm proud of and I think are good.
So what do you do that's maybe different, or what does it allow you to do that's different or unique that, say, you know, being a public institution or one where shares are more widely held, you know, what does that free you up from or allow you to do?
Certainly, public banks are driven by their price and their share price. But I think even private banks that have outside shareholders, it's an investment for them in a lot of ways, right? And so they look and say, I have X number of dollars tied up, and what's my return? What's my return on my equity in that situation? And that's important, and I never want to take that away from people. But when we're in the ownership structure that we're in, that becomes secondary. And we're able to do more on the purpose aspect of what's the purpose of our lives, what's the purpose of the bank? And I think that's where the real difference is. We're not driven by, hey, we got to hit a certain mark and get a certain return so that our shareholders are happy. I think it goes beyond that, and the returns and rewards are just in a different format other than money. And we look at the profits and the bottom line as more of a way to sustain what we're trying to do, not necessarily the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do. Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you do, or what is the purpose that you try to pursue or kind of manifest through the way that the bank's structured?
Sure. So, you know, when we use the word purpose, it really answers the question of why do we exist? And why does our bank exist? And our purpose statement is to positively impact our customers, our community, and our employees through Christian principles. And so we look at this asset, which in our case, in our eyes, this is an asset that's a gift from God that we're stewards of. And with that mindset, we simply want to be good stewards of that asset and try to make that impact on all those groups, our community, our customers, and our employees. And I guess like the old adage says, we want to leave everyone in a better place than when we found them and when we started. And if we can just be that impetus to try to help others and make a little bit of a difference, and when they can look back and say, hey, I'm glad Glenwood State Bank was part of my journey, that's fulfilling. And we feel that that's our purpose of why we're here, is to just make that impact on all those different entities. And it's rewarding. It's very rewarding to be able to do that.
So for a bank your size, around a half billion, you got a pretty wide portfolio of things that you do. You do personal banking, a pretty wide swath of commercial business banking, ag. You also have an insurance, and I think you said you also have a real estate brokerage as part of this as well. It falls under the umbrella of Glenwood State.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of that I don't. A lot of it is just the history of us. We've had a lot. We've had insurance. We've had real estate, and our diverse loan portfolio is really reflective of the area we're in. We're in an agricultural community, but we also have, you know, some tourism, some commercial, some manufacturing. And so, you know, we're blessed that we have that diversity, and we've just capitalized on, you know, on saying, hey, this is good for us, and we're gonna do all we can and to every aspect of our community. And so that's really, I don't know that it's much intention as just the way things have evolved, but we're very happy with the way things evolve. We don't really want to get to where we have all of our eggs in one basket. We like to just be able to be wherever our customers' needs are, and we'll just try to meet them wherever they are.
So are all the business lines, are they focused in the Glenwood, Minnesota area, or do you have ones that kind of take you further than that?
I'd say the commercial ones definitely take us further. I think when we look at consumer, we're primarily here unless we happen to have some relationships where, you know, people move or they have relatives, those kind of things where there probably is some previous connection to Glenwood State Bank. Agriculture is definitely focused around our area. We, you know, agriculture is, you know, you go to different parts of the country, it's different. Do we want to stick with what we know? But the commercial side is definitely one that we, you know, we have loans in almost every state. Not significant presence, but maybe it's one loan, but, you know, there's just some type of commercial property or, and I guess in some case, probably personal residences in every state. And so that's one that people have, we've reached further and people have been comfortable with us being their lender and their financial partner, even though we might not be in their backyard.
And is that you directly going to market, or are you using like partners or fintech channels or other things to originate that way?
We have not used fintech channels. We're still maybe old school of the relationship banking, where we want, you know, it's about that relationship and that trust that evolves from that. I'm certainly not discounting fintechs. I think they play a purpose, and I do believe they will play a purpose in our future too, as we figure out certain niches that we can hopefully provide some value in. But historically, and to this point anyway, it's, you know, the vast majority of it has just been the relationships that we have and the referrals that we get from our existing customers.
So, yeah, referrals in an important part, particularly in consumer lending. How does that play out on the business and ag side?
Well, I think there's probably two big components that we feel really make a difference in our lending relationship, and it's being able to add value. So the knowledge that we have in the industries that we focus in, we're able to add knowledge, whether that's, some of the multifamily housing and things of that nature. We've been doing it. We understand it. And that understanding helps them, but we're also able to take the knowledge that we gain from all of our different relationships and help everyone be successful. And I think the same is on agriculture. We understand agriculture. We understand that those markets go up and down. They have good years. They have bad years. And because of that knowledge that we have, and understanding maybe is another key word, we can be their financial, you know, partner for the long term. So I guess when you can add the value and you can have the patience to see people through the good times and the bad, we have a motto here that you don't need a bank in the good times. You need them in the bad times. And I think that's really true, because when things are good, everyone will be your friend. Everyone will be your bank. Everyone wants your business. It's when you have that hiccup and you need a little bit of help, who's going to be there for you? And we've historically proven that we're going to be there for you. We just work through everything that we can. Sometimes even the examiners are like, okay, this workout is significantly longer than it should be. That's just how we do it. As long as the customer is willing to continue to communicate and work hard, we're going to continue to work hard. And we're not going to just shut the door on someone. And that matters. And that, so when I'm getting back to referrals, that word travels, right? And because when someone says, hey, who do you bank with? They're like, well, you got to go with these guys, because they're going to be there for you. They're knowledgeable. They're patient. They're understanding of our industry. And they're going to be there in the good times and the bad. And so that's how our referral network works beyond just the consumer side of it.
Now you had mentioned that you've been with the bank since the mid-90s, correct?
Yep, 1996 is when I started.
96, okay. So you've seen a few bad times, I guess, during that time period. Has that really like changed your strategy at all? And like looking at the like latest roller coaster we've been on, is that changing your approach to this, or how the maybe specifically what you're doing about being this like friend in bad times?
You know, you realize that those times do work themselves out. They don't last forever. And so if you can be patient on, customer can be patient, we can be patient, we can work through a lot of stuff. A lot of restructuring, just a lot of creative ways to help people get from point A to point B. And I think, you know, it goes back to what I mentioned just earlier. If someone's willing to work hard and continue to kind of be all in and communicate well, a lot can happen. It's when that doesn't happen and people get to where they don't want to communicate, they don't want to be all in, and they start to try to do it on their own and not necessarily partner with the bank on that workout, you know, that's when things get tough. And so we've been able to find, you know, I guess we do a lot of stuff on the character side, right? To say, hey, is this the type of person that we want to be with? Because, you know, when someone's back's against the wall with financial challenges, that's when their true character comes out. And so we just try to make sure we understand what that back, you know, what that character is going to look like when they do face some adversity. And are we always right? No, but you know what? For the most part, we are right. And a lot of that maybe comes back to our values and our purpose statement and how we operate. And people know that. And I think we kind of attract those type of customers as well that says, you know what? They get it. They see there's a bigger picture. It's just not about making money. It's not about, you know, the latest and greatest niche. It's about the long-term game and truly being there for someone and having that relationship. So community banking is relationship banking, and that's just the epitome of who we are. It's maybe as simple as I can say it.
So how does that approach impact how you do like recruiting and training, like trying to maintain that as a culture at like all of your touch points and the extension of you know, all the different parts of the bank?
Well, we take our purpose statement, which, you know, which I've read, and we talk about that and the values that we have, and that's how we hire. We put them out there, and you tend to attract people that find that intriguing and find that to be a value fit for him or her. And our staffing has significantly changed since we did that. We did not always do that. We didn't always put our purpose and our values down on paper. They were kind of that typical up there on the wall, but we're not really sure, you know, beyond that. We incorporate them into every meeting. We talk about how we're living out our values. We incorporate them into our recruiting. We say, here's our values. What do you think of that? You know what? And some people, we're not a fit for everyone, and that's okay. But they self-select and say, you know, this isn't for me. That's not who I am. That's not the type of bank I want to work for. But then the ones that really, you know, it does align, and a lot of that has to do with them being able to live out their purpose of helping others and really making that impact, and not just, you know, the aspects of banking that would be more traditional of just, you know, underwriting loans or doing teller transactions, that it's bigger than that. And the impact that we're making, people love that. And in our particular case, they love the faith aspect of it too, where that they don't have to hide that.
This is an interesting point, and one that I hear fairly often from community financial institutions, that idea of the uniqueness of the culture and the approach for how they do the business, not necessarily what they do, because a lot of times, you know, banking is banking, but how it's done and the approach that's taken. And usually the hard part is the consistency, being able to do it all of the time. And it requires this like almost maniacal level of repetition from leadership to kind of maintain that and do it. There's a great book I'm thinking of by Ben Horowitz, who's a venture capitalist out in California. But the title of the book is, you know, you are what you do, or your culture is what you do, I think is the subtitle of it. But it's that idea of, yeah, you can put it on the wall, but it's meaningless if that doesn't actually impact the day-to-day of what happens, you know, at the endpoints, and particularly where that customer interaction takes place.
No, yeah, you're spot on, and you have to have it, you know, just be basically I can't think of the right word now, but it has to be a part of every aspect of what we do. And it has to, you know, from obviously training, our training is heavily based on that. It has to be part of our recruiting, but it also just on how we operate. And so we will base our decisions, you know, well, what would our purpose statement say? And so you try to come back to the why we're doing business all the time. And there's times where, it's just the right thing to do, right? And people say that all the time, but at the end of the day, there's times we could have made more money or lost less money, however you want to look at it, with certain customer things, but it's not the right thing to do. And it's kind of fun when new people come, they're like, man, I just can't believe you're doing that. Why are you giving them the refund? Because that's the right thing to do. We didn't do things perfectly. They deserve it. Yep, legally we don't have to, but it's the right thing to do. And that's pretty contagious, and people get excited about working for an organization that does that. And, you know, continuing to test what you do on a daily basis against your values and your purpose statement is really, that's really the key. And we try to do that. Are we perfect at it? No, but what we try. And I think every day we get a little better, and when you get used to it, you know, it starts becoming a habit. And then hopefully that consistency is when that comes in.
So beyond ownership, is banking really like the family business for you guys? Like, is there a lot of participation of the extended family in the various parts of the business?
Yeah, so right now I'm Generation 2, and my wife and I have been back at the bank since 1996. And so we kind of divided it up early, right? Did some financial stuff, my wife did the non-financial, and she's still involved in the HR, and actually she runs our operational side of it. And she has two siblings, and her brother is our chief credit officer. So he's heavily involved in the loan side of it. And then they have another sibling, and she does some special projects. She handles all of our building stuff. She handles all of our donations and the philanthropic aspect of it, some of the marketing things. And so we have, all three of the children of my father-in-law are involved, plus me. The other spouses of the children aren't involved, but we're here every day. That's what we do. And then we have nine in the next generation. So there's nine grandkids from my father-in-law. And none of them are quite at the age yet. I mean, some of them are getting in their early 20s, and so they're starting to think about it, but they're just finishing school. And, you know, it's absolutely a possibility if they want to come back. But honestly, we say if it works for you, great. But, you know, you have to really want to do what we're doing and believe in what we're doing. Because there's a lot of jobs out there, and this is about really making that impact in our community. And I, you know, it's way too early to tell if anyone's going to do that. But that's really what we talk about is if you want to be here, there's a spot for you. And if you want to be able to make that impact with us and continue the legacy, let's do it. If not, that's fine too. You can be an owner that's not here every day. We believe that that can work as well.
So is there any like formality around that or like hard rules about if somebody wants to come work in the business?
You have to work somewhere else for a couple of years. And I think that's, you know, what it's like to work somewhere else, but also to prove that you can prove to maybe when you come back that you're not just, oh, I couldn't get another job, so I guess I'm going to work my family business. And in certain levels of ownership or certain levels of leadership, they're requiring certain levels of education as well. Mm-hmm. It's really to hold the integrity for that person to say, no, this person's worthy. They didn't just get it because they have lucky DNA. We want them to earn it, and they have to be the best person to do the job. And, you know, certainly intelligence is there, but when you're an owner, you have some advantages. You have some legacy of what you've done over the years. You have some knowledge that you have. And when you're an owner, there's some advantages that you have out in the marketplace. But being held to that high standard also comes with some extra responsibilities too, right?
Yeah. That reminds me of, I know Ferragamo, the Italian shoes and fashion house was like, they were like famously like very, very rigid in the control about how they would have generational peace. But like, you could not come to work for the company until you had gone out and legitimately had a career at effectively a competitor, right? Had worked in the industry elsewhere. So yeah, that's a great way to kind of maintain that consistency and particularly, you know, not allowing that culture and purpose to drift.
I
imagine some of this probably comes with some issues about, you know, managing other employees that are also family members that you're going to see at Thanksgiving and stuff like that. And then you get into the whole thing about succession planning, right? Does that kind of create a problem or a headache that you normally wouldn't see?
Well, absolutely. There's extra, you know, I think there's advantages of being community or family owned. Simply, like I talked about, you get to kind of decide what your purpose is, and it doesn't have to be about a return. That's, you know, the huge advantage. Working with family is rewarding because you get to spend more time with them. I'm with my wife all the time, day and night, and that's fantastic. But it does come with some challenges. I think the key I would say is just that communication around it, and maybe the communication ahead of time, right? And so that we know how people are going to be compensated, we know how people are going to be evaluated, and you set the expectations there. And we're working through some of that even more so now, that so we can set the third generation up for more success, because every generation is going to get more complicated, because now it's not siblings, it's cousins. And then it's second cousins. And that, I think that's harder, because there's just a different level of relationship between siblings as there is cousins and things of that nature, or nieces and nephews and stuff. And so we're trying to have a lot of communication around that, and set some expectations of what that can look like. We've done a decent job so far, but now we think we need to bring it to another level for that third generation as that starts to become more of a reality.
Well, this is a really interesting and unique story, and I'm really grateful we had a chance to hear from you and get your perspective on it. If anybody's interested in learning more about you or your approach or Glenwood State Bank, where can they go to find out more?
You can call my cell phone, I suppose, if you want. 0815-7232. We put it on the website. That's part of being family owned, where you're accessible. We're not trying to be unaccessible. We are part of the bank, and I have no problem. People call me day and night and weekends. That's just who we are when we want to serve. Otherwise, GlenwoodState.bank is our website, and then contact information is on there. So that would be another simple way to do it, I guess. Or Peter@GlenwoodState.bank would be my email. But yeah, I'd love to talk about, I'm passionate about community banking and family ownership, family business. And so I can talk about it a long time, and we're certainly not perfect at it, but we enjoy it, and hopefully we're finding some success along the way.
Well, thanks for being and sharing your story. Thanks again, Peter.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity. Blessings to you.
This has been Behind the Vault, a production of Mindspan Systems, helping community FIs provide service like no other. Learn more at mindspan8.com. If you're a community bank or credit union leader and have a story to tell, please visit behindthevaultpod.com/guest. That's behindthevaultpod.com/guest. If you found this episode useful, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, as that helps other FI leaders like you find the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for more insider stories from community banking on Behind the Vault.